Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Megillah. This series of recordings is a joint project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are in the second chapter of Megillah on Daf Yudchet Amud Aleph, that's 18a, and we have been discussing the Shmona Esrei, the 18 blessings. Nowadays we say 19 blessings, but we still sometimes call it Shmona Esrei. The 18 blessings that are said each day three times as part of davening. And we said that there's an order to all the 18 blessings, and we had two different opinions about how that order came to be. We first cited an opinion that the order was created by Shimon HaPakuli, and that he didn't create that order until basically the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. But we have another tradition that says that it was the men of the Great Assembly, which is much earlier, all the way back to the beginning of the Second Temple period, perhaps even earlier than that, who ordered it. And what we said is, it's true that originally the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the men of the Great Assembly, ordered the 18 blessings, but then their order fell into disuse, or it was forgotten, or nobody used it anymore. And that Shimon HaPakuli, basically, though he didn't come up with it all by himself, but he restored the original order of the 18 blessings. Now from here, once we have what Shimon HaPakuli did, is he established a sort of canon. He established that this is Shmona Esrei, meaning there's a formal text to the Shmona Esrei, and you're not allowed to change it anymore. And that's where we come into our next sugya here, which begins in the medium lines, four lines up from the medium lines, third word in the line. So it says, once you've established that, we say, Mikan va'elech, from here and onwards, meaning from the time of Shimon HaPakuli, which is approximately, the end of the first century CE, just around the time of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Mikan va'elech, from here and on, Asur l'saper b'shibcho shel makom. It is forbidden to recount the praise of Hashem. Oh, that sounds very surprising. What does it mean, it's forbidden to recount the praise of Hashem? What it means is, it's forbidden to incorporate your own individualized praise of Hashem. In other words, you have to say the words that Shimon HaPakuli said. He established what the Shevach of Hashem is, how you praise Hashem when you're davening Shmona Esrei, and it's no longer individual. Each person doesn't make up their own praise of Hashem, you say his. And even if you say his, you can't take away some of it or add on to some of it. That's the idea, that once there is a fixed prayer, within that prayer, you have to say it. So he says, Asur l'saper b'shibcho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's forbidden to relate the praise of Hashem. To Amar Abelazar, as Abelazar said, my dichtiv, what is written, Mi malel gvurot Hashem yashmiha kol tehilato. This is a verse from Tehillim. Who can tell the power of Hashem? Who can make heard all of his praise? So we're the psalmist here, David HaMelech, is saying, who can possibly fully recount Hashem's praise? So then the Gemara says, Lami na'e l'malel gvuras Hashem. For whom is it nice, or is it appropriate to utter the gvuras Hashem, the strength of Hashem? Lami sheyachol lashmia kol tehilato. Anyone who can fully express his praise. But if you're unable to fully express his praise, which means basically all of us, then you shouldn't do it. Now again, we're only referring here, we're not saying that you cannot express Hashem's praise at all, as Rashi points out. This is only related to the kviut bracha, that Chazal, that Shimon HaPakuli, and the men of Yavne established fixed texts for prayer. And once they established them, they realized that they couldn't fully express Hashem's praise. So they said, everybody should say the same thing. We have the best minds and the best rabbis in our generation have established a fixed set of prayer, and that's what you should say. You shouldn't say more. So, for instance, you shouldn't, if it says in Shmona Esrei, Hagadol Hagibor VeHanora, so we express Hashem's praise as the great one, the strong one, the awesome one. You shouldn't add on six other adjectives. Hagibova, Norava, Mahulova, Mahader, whatever, you can add on all your other adjectives, because you already know that you can't fully express Hashem's praise. So pretending that you can is a kind of an arrogance of saying, oh, well, these rabbis, they only said these three adjectives, I'll add in three more adjectives, and then I'll show what a great praiser of Hashem I am. Instead, at least in the fixed prayers, we suffice with the words that the Anshei Knesset HaGadol said. And it seems to me that If you're offering a private prayer to Hashem in your own language, or if you're adding on an extra prayer after the Shmoneh Esrei, or in any other time where you don't have to use a fixed prayer, then you can say whatever you want to. You can praise Hashem as much as you want to. But in the fixed prayer service, you have to say it the way that it was established. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Rabba Bar Bar Chana says one more teaching related to restricting our ability to praise Hashem. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, "Hamasaper b'shibcho shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu yoter midai." One who relates the praise of Hashem too much. Now, it's not saying that you can't praise Hashem too much. What we're saying is that you're doing it too much. In other words, you're pretending like you have the full praise of Hashem. It's better sometimes to just suffice with a small prayer, which we can admit we haven't said everything, than to try to pretend that we've said everything. So he says, a person who says, who praises Hashem too much, ne'akar min ha'olam, he is taken out, he is uprooted from this world. Shenemar, as it says, this is a verse in Eov chapter 37, verse 19. Hayisupar lo, can it be told to him, ki adaber, that I am speaking, im amar ish, if a man will say so, ki yivula, then he will be swallowed up. Now, there is a pshat reading of this verse, but this is the way the rabbis read it, as Rashi explains. Hayisupar lo ki adaber, is it possible for one to be misaper, to relate the full praise of Hashem? Im amar ish, if a man will say that he has expressed the full praise of Hashem, ki yivula, then he will be swallowed up. So in other words, we should not be arrogant enough to think that we can fully express Hashem's praise. Okay, now once we have said this, that we shouldn't overly praise Hashem, the Gemara is going to recount that in general, it is better to be quiet than to say foolish things, or it is better to hold your peace than to say things that are inadequate. Darash Rabbi Yehuda ish kvar Giboraya. Rabbi Yehuda, a man of the village of Giboraya, made a drasha. Va'amrila ish kvar Gibor Chayil. Some people say he was from a place called Gibor Chayil. These seem to be villages in the north of Israel. My dichtiv, what is it that is written? And this is in Tehillim Samechei, the 65th Psalm. Lecha dumia tehila. This is the way they're going to read it. To you, lecha dumia, silence or lack of motion, tehila is a praise. What is praiseworthy about silence? So he says, sama dekola mashtuka. The greatest drug of all is silence. Now, I don't know why. I looked in Tehillim Samechei to see if there's any reference there to drugs or to spices or anything like that, and I didn't see anything, so I'm not sure why he relates it specifically to samim. I don't know the answer to that, but what he says, the head of all spices, the thing that gives the most pleasure to a conversation is actually not saying things. This is a lesson in our generation that we totally have not learned. Ki ata Ravdimi, when Ravdimi came from Babylonia to Israel, Amar, he said, Amri b'ma'arava, I'm sorry, he went from Israel to Babylonia. He said, Amri b'ma'arava, he told the Babylonians in the west means Israel, because Israel is west of Babylonia. So when sages would go from Israel to Babylonia, they would say, here's what we say in the west. In the west, we say as follows, we have a saying, Mila b'sela, a word is worth a coin. A sela is a certain kind of a coin, let's say it's a dollar coin. Mashtuka betrayed. Silence is worth two selas. It's worth two coins. In other words, a word is worth something, saying something is worth something, but knowing when to be quiet is worth twice as much. In the Gos HaBach, he brings an alternative version. It is not in either of those. It's in the Aruch. There's a footnote that in the Aruch, he brings an alternative version that says, Mashtuka ke'even taba, that silence is like a precious gem. So I don't think it means that you should always be silent, but better to be silent than to say the wrong thing. In the age of Twitter, we have it completely upside down. Okay, the next sugya goes back to our Mishnah. As you'll notice, we are three lines down in the wide lines, and there are two vertical dots. And there's just a couple of words in between two sets of vertical dots, and those are quotations from the Mishnah. So we're going back to the Mishnah, beginning a new topic. In the Mishnah, it says, And we're going to actually flip back to the Mishnah, because if you'll see what it says in our Gemara, it says, Kara al peh lo yatza. If you read the Megillah by heart, meaning you weren't reading it from the text, you were just reciting it from memory, lo yatza, you have not fulfilled your obligation. And then it says, v'cho, with a slash. V'cho means v'chule, which is a way of saying, and all the rest, or etc. So since it says etc., it means it wants us to look at the Mishnah, so we should flip back to Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, at the very beginning of our chapter, to see what it says. So we already, from the beginning of our Mishnah, it said, Hakoreta Megillah Lamafreya, one who reads the Megillah out of order, lo yatza, does not fulfill its obligation. And we discussed that, although we're going to come back to it. The next phrase of the Mishnah says, Kara al peh. If you read it by heart, lo yatza. But it also brings another case. It says, Kara targum b'chol lashon lo yatza. If you read it in translation, which we think might mean Aramaic, because usually Targum means translate in Aramaic, but Rashi says, and we will understand from the Gemara, that it means translated in any language. And Megillah translated in any language, lo yatza, you are not fulfill your obligation. However, the next line in the Mishnah says, avol korin oto liloazot bilaz, but if you read it to foreigners, people who speak other languages, bilaz in their language, yatza, then you do fulfill your obligation, and we're going to be troubled by this contradiction. Are you allowed to read the Megillah translated into another language, or are you not allowed to read the Megillah translated into another language? Okay, back to our Gemara, Yud Chet Amud Aleph, three lines down in the wide lines. Minalan, what is the source that if you read it by heart, that you are not Yotze? You have to read it from the text. Amar Rava, Rava said, Atya Zechira Zechira. Okay, we are going to make a hekesh, a halachic connection, between two uses of the word zechira, which usually means to remember or to articulate in a way that reminds people. Ketiv hacha, it's written here, that is in the Megillah, v'hayamim ha'ela nizkarim, and these days shall be remembered. And we understand that, we darshan that, nizkarim, meaning that you have to read the Megillah. On every Purim, the way in which the events of Purim are remembered is by reading them out loud in Shul. So these days are remembered, nizkarim, uktiv hatam, and it's written there. This is referring to remembering what Amalek did to us when we came out of Egypt. We have a special mitzvah of remembering Amalek, and it says there, kitov zot zikaron basefer. Write what Amalek did as a remembrance in a book. So it uses the same language of zikaron. So here it says nizkarim, and there it says zikaron. And there it particularly mentions that it should be written in a book. So we say ma lahalan basefer, just like there in that other place. Usually lahalan means forward, but in this case it's backwards. But in that other place it says in a book, afkan basefer. So too here, it should be in a sefer. And that's interesting because sometimes we call the Megillah a sefer, a book, and sometimes we call it an igaret, a letter. But here it just means that it must be written down. Umimai dahai zechira kriyahi. How do you know that remembering it means that you have to articulate it, that you have to say it out loud, that you have to read it? Dilma iyun be'oma. Maybe you just have to read it with your eyes. You can scan it with your eyes, and that's how you'll come to remember the story. Maybe all it means is that every Purim, every Jew should read the Megillah to themselves. They should just read it, just the way we read. We don't read things out loud. Lo solka datach, do not let that occur to you. Dichtiv, as it is written there, or ditanya, replace that as it is written with, as we learn in a Braita, zachor. There it says you shall remember, that's the word we use to remember the Holocaust, right? Zachor, but it's used originally for Amalek. Remember, yachol balev, perhaps remembering means we should remember in our hearts. But then, kishahu omer lo tishkach, at the end of that same paragraph where it says zachor, it says never forget. That's how we translate it. It means do not forget. Lo tishkach, do not forget. Hare shikichat halev amor. When it says do not forget, it means do not forget in your heart. So lo tishkach already covers your heart. Hama ni mekayem zachor. So then what will I understand the meaning of zachor to mean? Bapeh, it must be out loud. So since lo tishkach means do not forget in your heart, zachor is always going to mean to read it out loud. So we know that both you have to write it down basefer in a book, and also when it says zachor, it means that it has to be read out loud. And this is going to be relevant for us us as we go forward as well. So now we hit another two dots. We go back to the Mishnah. Kara targum lo yatza. If we read it in translation, then you do not fulfill your obligation. But we saw immediately afterwards it says that you can read it to foreign people in their language. So we're going to have to figure this out. Hey chidami, what is the case? That's what hey chidami means. How exactly is this situation? Ilema, if I will say diktiva mikra, if I will say that the Megillah is written in Hebrew, the kari la targum, and he just translates it on the fly. As he's reading the Hebrew, he translates it into Aramaic or to English. Hainu al peh, that's the same as doing it by heart, basically. I mean, the words are not written there. He's pulling the words out of his own memory. Lo, you're right, so that can't be the case. Tzricha, it's necessary. The case in the Mishnah is necessary. Diktiva targum, Vikari la targum. The case that we're talking about in the Mishnah is that it is written in a foreign language and read in a foreign language. Not that he's translating a Hebrew scroll. It's actually written in Aramaic and he's reading it in Aramaic. Or it's written in English and he's reading in English. And there we say that that is lo yatza. So it sounds like from here that a Megillah must be written in Hebrew, because if it's written in another language, in a translated language, it's no good. Ah, but now we go back to the Mishnah, another two dots. But if you read it to foreign people in a foreign language, then he does fulfill his obligation. How can we do this? So that's the first question the Gemara is going to ask. But you just said that if I read it in any other language, he has not fulfilled his obligation. So there's an internal contradiction in the Mishnah as to whether or not a Megillah can be written and read in other languages or not. So the first solution that the Gemara is going to try to say is that of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel de Amri Tarvayhu. Rav and Shmuel said together, in other words, these two powerful rabbis agreed, they issued a joint opinion, that what we're talking about here is Bilaz Yivani. When it says that you can read it to foreigners in a foreign language, it doesn't mean any foreigners and any foreign language. It only means Greek. So you can have, according to Rav and Shmuel, a Megillah written in Greek, and you can read it in Greek. So according to Rav and Shmuel, that's it. A Megillah can be written in Hebrew and read in Hebrew, or in Greek and read in Greek, but no other languages are okay. So they're limiting it only to the Greek language. And we saw this before. We saw the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel earlier, that the Torah scrolls could only be written in Hebrew or Greek, and that the rabbi said Torah scrolls could be written in any language. So we're going to find that same machloket here as we go forward. But Rav and Shmuel seem to agree with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel that Greek is the only exception. Hechidami, how exactly is the case? Ile madichtiva ashurit v'kari la yivanit. It's the same as our previous sugya. What if you're saying it's written in Hebrew in the special ashurit script, the Assyrian Hebrew block script, v'kari la yivanit, and then he is reading it in Greek. In other words, he's translating the Hebrew into Greek and saying it out loud in Greek. Hainu al peh, that's the same as saying it by heart. It doesn't work. We know already that that's no good. Amar Rabacha, Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabacha said in the name of Rabbi Elazar, Shektuva Bilazi Vanit. Nope, what we're talking about here is a Megillah that's written in Greek and that's read in Greek. Now we're gonna skip the next three lines. We'll come back to them at the end of the recording, but they have nothing to do with our sugya, and they are only inserted here because we just had a teaching from Rabbi Acha in the name of Rabbi Elazar, and this is another teaching on an entirely different topic that was said by the same rabbi. So we're gonna skip it, we'll come back at the end. So skip down three lines to the line that begins Meitveh, okay? Which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines down in the wide lines. Meitveh, I have a question on Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel said that Greek is an exception, that you can write a Megillah in Greek and you can read it in Greek. But I have a teaching that says as follows. Kara Jiptit, if I read the Megillah in Egyptian, that's what Jiptit means, it probably means the Coptic script, which is kind of an Egyptian script, Ivrit, Hebrew, and this we have a big problem, which is why Rashi says this is not biblical Hebrew, this is some other language of the people from the other side of the river, like from Me'ever HaNahar, that Ivrit is some other language, but that's a very problematic thing. So if it's read in Egyptian, Coptic, Hebrew, Ilmit, that's Elamite, Madit, that's Midian, Yevanit, or Greek, lo yatza, he is not yotze. So according to this teaching, Greek is no good for the Megillah, which goes against Rav and Shmuel. So they answer, halo damya, nope, that is not, that does not, that's not, doesn't match up to what Rav and Shmuel are saying. Elalaha, but this is how the teaching should go. Jiptit la jiptim. You can read it in Egyptian, Coptic to Copts. Ivrit la ivrim. You can read it in this Hebrew language to Hebrews. Ilmit la imim. Elamite language to Elamites. Yvanit la yvanim. And if you read it in Greek, to Greeks, yatsa. In other words, when our Mishnah says that you can read it to lo azot, to foreign people who speak foreign language, it could be any of these foreign languages, Coptic, Hebrew, Elamite, Medit, or Greek. But the key is that they have to be those people. My son asked me a kasha on this. Does it mean that they have to be actually Greeks, or it just means that they understand the language? Like if I'm American, but I speak Coptic, or I understand Coptic, does that count, or do I have to be from that land? So it seems to me that we're talking about the language, and we'll see a little later as we go. But we still have a problem, because according to this, you can only read the Megillah to people who understand that language. Now, there's a big machloket in the Rishonim about whether or not they also understand Hebrew. Rashi seems to indicate that even if they understand Hebrew, if they understand these other languages, they can hear the Megillah in this language. The Ramban seems to indicate that only if they don't understand Hebrew, meaning a loes is someone who only speaks another language. So any, like an American Jew who speaks English but doesn't speak Hebrew, that would work. You'd be able to read to them in English because English is the only language they understand. But if you have an American Jew who also speaks Hebrew, they would have to hear it in Hebrew. There is such a machloket. The Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, seems to paskin, like Rashi, that even if you understand Hebrew, you could hear the Megillah written in another language. We're going to finish the sugya, but it's an interesting question because the conclusion of the Gemara seems to indicate that a Megillah may be written in another language and read in another language to people who understand that language. But I have never ever seen that done, and I've never even heard it discussed, even in a Kiruv context. It seems like the halacha comes out that you could do such a thing. In the Mishnah Brura, he mentions that there are a number of poskim that have come out against this practice. But in the Be'er Halacha, he indicates that it seems like many, many Rishonim seem to hold that you can do it. So it's possible simply that for whatever reason, either lechatchila, it's of course better to do it in Hebrew, or in deference to those poskim who are opposed to it, that I have never heard of a Megillah reading done in another language, but as a halachic topic, it's an interesting topic to pursue. Okay, ihachi, if it's so that you can read Greek to Greeks only, Ravu Shmuel, amai mukmila lematnitin bilaz yevanit. Rav and Shmuel, why would they establish the Mishnah related to only Greek? Remember, Rav and Shmuel said Greek is the only language that you can read it to foreign people in, no other language. Lokma b'cholaz, let them establish it for any language, meaning according to this other source, you can read it in Coptic to Copts and Hebrew to Hebrews and Median to Medians. So why would you establish it only for Greek? It should be any language as long as the people speak that language. So we still have a problem. Ella, and this next phrase is in brackets, so we do include it in the text. Ella matnitin kebraita. Our Mishnah is exactly like the Braita. The Braita says you can read it in a language that a specific person understands. That is, you can read it in Jiptit for Jiptim, Egyptian for Egyptians. And that's how our Mishnah holds as well. In other words, we disagree with Rav and Shmuel. We're saying that any language works as long as the person speaks that language, but they have to be able to understand it. The Chi'itmar de Ravu Shmuel, and when we're talking about Rav and Shmuel, who said specifically Greek, but Alma Itmar, they're just in general saying that Greek is an exception to the rule, meaning that there is Hebrew, all the other languages, and Greek. Greek is a special exception. So that's problematic. Ravu Shmuel de Amri Tarvayhu Lazi Vani Lakol Kasher. Rav and Shmuel seem to be saying jointly that in Greek it works for anybody, meaning you can read it in Hebrew, our working assumption is, to everyone, even if they don't understand Hebrew. and you can read it in another language if they do understand that language. But where are Rav and Shmuel? They seem, is Greek more like Hebrew or like other languages? It seems to be that they're saying that Greek is like Hebrew, meaning even if you don't understand Greek, the Megillah can be read, written and read in Greek. The Hakatani Yevanit Levanim. But in the Braita it says that you can only read Greek to Greek people. V'hakatani Yevanit Levanim in, that Greek to Greek people, yes, in means yes. Lukule Alma, but to the rest of the world, in other words, people who don't speak Greek, lo, you cannot read it. So he says, Inhu, they, that is Rav and Shmuel, de amor ki Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel. Now we come back to Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel. That abbreviation, Rashbag, stands for Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. They hold like Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel, Ditnan, as we learned earlier in our Masechta. Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer, Af Sefarim, even Torah scrolls, lo hitiru, they did not permit, Sheikhtivu, that they should be written in any other language, Ella Yivani, except for Greek. So that's what they held. They held in what Rav and Shmuel simply mean is that Torah scrolls can be written in Greek. And by Torah scrolls, they mean including Megillahs, because Megillahs are part of Tanakh. V'leimru halachik Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel. So why don't Rav and Shmuel just say, we hold like Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel, instead of giving their whole opinion? Iyamri halachik Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel. If they were to say that the halacha is like Rashbag, like Rav and Shimon ben Gamliel, hava amina, I would have thought, Hane Mile Sha'ar Sfarim. That refers to any other books in all of Tanakh. Any of the other 23 books of Tanakh can be written in Greek. Aval Megillah, but Megillah is a special case. Tichtiv ba kichtavam. It says specifically in the Megillah that it must be written like it is written. And since Esther and Mordechai wrote it in Hebrew, there would be a special chumrah, a special stringency related to the Megillah, that even Rav and Shmuel would agree that it can only be written in Hebrew and not in Greek. Eimalo, I would say it cannot be written in Greek. Kamashmalan, this comes to teach you that even the Megillah, Rav and Shmuel hold, can be written in Greek. Of course, it's unclear whether or not we hold, like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that Torah scrolls can be written in Greek, or like the rabbis, who hold that Torah scrolls can be written in any language. And at the end of the day, that might impact the question of whether or not you can have a Megillah written and read in other languages or in Greek. In any case, we are almost going to stop here, but we left out three lines that we need to go back to. So we want to go back to the three lines from where we stopped. Well, let's count from the wide lines. We'll count down from the wide lines. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9 wide lines down. 9 wide lines down at the very last line on that line. It says, the Amar Rab Acha Amar Rab Elazar, and it was said, Rab Acha said in the name of Rab Elazar. Now Rab Acha was the author of the previous statement, which was that we're talking about a Megillah that's written in Greek and that's read in Greek. And here we have another teaching said by Rabbi Acha in the name of Rabbi Elazar that has nothing to do with anything else in this section. So we're just adding it on at the end. Minayin, from how do we know from the Torah, Shekaro HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYaakov El, that the Holy One called Yaakov God, which is kind of surprising and interesting, that he would give Yaakov a name of a divinity, that he called Yaakov Kael, gave him this name. Shenemar, as it says, Vayikra lo, and he called him El, God, Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel. So here what we're talking about is Yaakov built a Mizbeach, he built an altar, and he called the altar in the name of Hashem, the God of Israel. The Gemara is going to reject this pshat explanation. De'isal kadatach, if you were to think, La Mizbeach kara le Yaakov El, that Yaakov is calling the Mizbeach in God's name. Vayikra lo Yaakov mi ba'alei. Then it should have said Yaakov's name. It should have said Vayikra Yaakov lo, instead of just saying Vayikra lo. Ella Vayikra lo, what does it mean he called him? Li Yaakov. He called Yaakov. And what did he call Yaakov? He called him El, God. Umi karo El, and who called him El? Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel. That's who called Yaakov Kael. So they read the verse that the God of Israel called Yaakov Kael. Now, why would the God of Israel be interested in calling Yaakov Kael when that's a name that is supposed to be set aside for God. It's one of the divine names for God. Why would you call a human being that name? I have no idea why he would say such a thing or why he wants to read the pasuk this way. It is a mystery that requires further investigation. We're going to stop here. Have a wonderful day.